हरे हे ओ
Let him, during the morning twilight, muttering the savitri until the sun appears, but let him recite it in the evening until the constellations can be seen distinctly. Okay, so that it's the same time, but it's in the reverse. So it's just before the sun comes up and just after the sun sets. That's the time of the twilight. Right? Because it means it's not dark, but the sun's not up. Or it's the sun has gone down, but it's not dark yet. Right? So that's considered the best time. What I'll also see is that at that time both of the nostrils will both be working. Otherwise, it's one side or the other. But always at the sandhya, they're both working. That's another way of telling it. So at this time, it's the intensity is greater because you're having two different things. You know, just like a chutney is more intense than other preparations, because it's a combination, right? You know, sweet has one thing, salt has one thing, the sour has one, like this, but it's all of it together, so it becomes more intense. So if you are focused at that time, then you get more benefit. But if you're not doing this, then you'll be really engaged in material stuff, like you see the birds and other things, animals, at this time, they're all running around and going really crazy, you know, so that's the... is to use it. He who mutters the savitri during the morning twilight removes the guilt contracted during the previous night. But he who recites it in the evening destroys the sin he committed during the day. So whatever was before that, you get purified of whatever activities was before. He who desires to perform the ceremony of the daily recitation may even recite the savitri near water, retiring into the forest, controlling his organs and concentrating his mind. Right, so near water, in water, like that, these things, because they also help, because the flowing river calms the nerves. So just watching it also, but if you're in it, then even more the effect. Yes.
What is the difference between savitri and gayatri?
What's the difference between Mohan Das Gandhi and Mahatma Gandhi?
Short form. It is given as one.
But his name is Mahatma?
It is given as some respect to some respect.
Yes, so it's just a different name. You know what I'm saying? It's a synonym. Savitri, Gayatri. Like that. I'm sure the root has some difference what it's bringing out, but
what
do
you mean by Gayatri?
That is because you're not dealing with the twilight there, so it just means what's in between. You know, it just means where would be the middle of the day. So here, technically, the middle of the day is about 11, between 11:40, 11:45, like that, just because of where we are. And, you know, because the difficulty comes is, let's say, you know, you're up very far north. So traditionally, the Aryans never lived that far north, you know. The tribals would, because that's, you know, the space, no one else is living there, right? So then, you know, the sun goes down at, you know, 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, and it's up at 3 in the morning, you know. And the Sunday is about 2 hours instead of, you know, 40 minutes, you know. like that. So therefore probably just said 6 in the morning, 12 noon, and 6 in the evening, because that way then at least you had a regulated time, because if you went by this exactly, you know, you go nuts in some places. Or you also have some places, you know, you would wait till 10 in the morning, chant the Gayatri, and then about, you know, how you say 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, then you chant your next one, and then you have to do the one in between. So it's like, you know, every 2 hours you'd be chanting.
That's in the winter time.
Yeah.
And then in like the summertime, it'll
be. And then what do you do if you're farther north? You know, the sun just keeps going around.
Yeah.
It never goes down, or it never even comes up. So it's like, you understand? So because generally it's said that people would reside, you know, where coconut trees grow.
Hmm.
You know, where the, you know. So it means that sages for austerity may go farther north, like into the Himalayas and all that. But everybody else lives. So you take that band and go around, and that's kind of like, you know, that's good. Any farther north. I mean, why are they fighting so much over that piece of land? You know, if it was farther north, they fight, but not that much. Right? You know? Isn't it? Well, you can't say that, you know, Germany or Sweden or that, they've been fighting over it, you know, tooth and nail for 4,000 years, right? You know, it's too far north. Does that make sense? Yes.
The North Pole, you can chant 3 Gayatris a year.
Yeah.
3 a year.
3 a year, you know. You know, yeah.
One was just now, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, yeah.
6 months time, one halfway between.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Here we start from 11:45 till.
Means that's when the middle of the day is. So that's just around that time. But it moves here. It moves like in the winter. It can be even as early as 11:20. So generally, you know, it's just that's the area, you know, like that. So that's the middle. But otherwise, the normal thing was is you'd shoot for that, but you wouldn't want to go past, you know. In the West, if there was some program or something, I think devotees have seen probably chanting about 3 o'clock even, because it was after the program, because the program went through the middle. But if that's not there, then you would choose, you know, closer around 12. It just means that the time, because Gayatris are also time-bound, because they're dealing with the element of what is happening within the material arrangement. The holy name's not. So it's not bound by time, but the Gayatri is, because if at that time the focus will be there, everything will be good. Does that make sense? So if you miss one at that time, then the next time that comes, that's when you make up the one lost. You know, but they're always made up. You never, it's never skip it that, oh, we missed that one. You know, it's just like if you skipped lunch, then you would definitely in the evening just eat the normal amount, right? Because, you know, it's gone, you know, like that. Or you miss some sleep, then, you know, you wouldn't bother like that. But so Gayatri has to be made, be caught up.
Maharaj, the evening Gayatri, I've heard that it protects you from the influence of the night.
It may have that protection, but it specifically removes anything bad from the day. But it could also then give proper consciousness for the night. Like that. But here it's.
What are the timings here? Sorry, for the morning and the evening
cloud? Means it's the timing is when the sun's just before the sun's come up, and just after the sun's gone down. But here, even here, it moves back. Means I can, you know, middle of summer means it's coming up. Then at 4:30, you can look out the jolly work in the Panchatattva temple and see the sun. It's just popped up, you know. So generally it's like that area in there. So then, because they're doing it also as japa, so they want to get more of an exact time. Because we have to remember in here, then the Gayatri would be their japa. That's why he says, let him muttering this out until the sun appears. So that would mean if he's doing 1,008 Gayatris, he would have started much earlier, right back in the Brahma Muhurta, and then been chanting until the sun rises. And so then, does that make sense? So it's generally it's after you've had your bath, you know, and are ready, if it's within, you know, the proper time, you know, and then the evening, you know, after the bath there, and then with that time. Does that make sense? But if you're getting up at midnight, then you might not chant, then you might wait a little bit later. Yes. But I wouldn't recommend that if you're in the temple, then during the program, be chanting Gayatri.
Suppose if someone is doing some puja before Mangalarati, then involves some Gayatri recitation?
I mean, if you can take the time to do the full Gayatri, you could use it. But generally, for a puja, you don't do the full Gayatri. You only use the specific for what puja you're doing. So general tendency is if you're doing puja during that time, then you would chant, you'd get up, take your bath, chant your Gayatri, then start the puja. Yeah, like that. Because in puja, you only use Gopal mantra, Kam Gayatri, or something like that. You're not going to chant the whole thing. And if you can work it in, then nice, but I would tend not to count on it, especially if it's going to create a problem with time.
So after Mangalarati, you have to do some pujas the proper time?
I can. I would tend to do it before because it's already light in that. But it'll also work. Yeah, it'll work because we have these other aspects, and so then it can be done, just like we were saying about the yajna. All right, it has its timings when it's done, depending on what the priority is. So at that time, after Tulsi Puja, that'll work. I mean, I always find the focus is better when it's dark. So there. Yes.
It is the morning Gayatri standing.
See, is ask about the little letters if you're ready for the answers. You know what I'm saying? It's what you don't really worry about, you're not responsible for. What you worry about, this is here because in my experience in giving any of this, especially to Westerners, they'll never ask about the verse. Their question is always about the part that's been removed from the verse. Always. So therefore, it's there just because it's referenced for when they're asking. Because the point is, standing in the morning because you tend to sleep. But in the evening, you have to sit because you get so excited that you want to stand up and that you have to sit. So the point is, the standing goes with the sitting. And if you're not going to stand or sit, don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, don't get into these things just for, you know, it's fun. Because these are the light ones. It gets worse. Does that make sense? In other words, just curiosity is, this is not something just for curiosity. This is for something for application. So the point is, the standing is because, in other words, you should be doing what's going to create the best focus. Right? Because by standing, then you will be able to, you know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's the thing, is that this is the fun part, is you see all the Brahmins sitting there. They're all facing east, of course. The best part is when Prabhupada is here, and they're sitting to the east of Prabhupada with their back to Prabhupada because they're facing east. But what they forget is what's special about east is the sun comes up from there, and the sun represents knowledge. So then, if they faced Prabhupada, even though it was west, that would actually be facing east. So that's just absolutely not understanding what they're doing. And they're all sitting there very nicely in their yoga poses and all that. But technically, they're supposed to be standing. You know what I'm saying? So this is the fun. Is that they get into these rules because it means something to them. And, you know, one brahmachari starts and they're all sitting there and they're all, you know, cutting their profile. You know, it's like, you know, one guy gets a tattoo and then they all add a tattoo. You know, it's like that kind of a thing. You know what I'm saying? So the point is what situation is going to create the best focus? Right? Because the Gayatri is dealing, being with the qualification, the basis of goodness. you're not in goodness, not focused, you don't get anything from it. The holy name, then whether you're focused or not, you're getting some benefit. You will get more if you properly focus. But the other one, it just doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? Because the holy name, 16 names, is all transcendental. In the Gayatri, you got 3 out of all those. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the point. It requires the focus. That's why it's given at greater maturity, because then you can actually get something from it. It requires more material qualification, but it gives less benefit. Well, the holy name gives more benefit, requires, you know, basically little or no qualification. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that the rules have meaning, and so it is beneficial to stand and sit. But then also that level goes throughout the whole thing. So if you're going to just, you know, get the Gayatri done and that's all, then that's great, then don't worry about that. But we should be very careful about pulling. But the point is, if you stand, you'll be focused. Because if you sit, you might fall asleep. In the evening, if you stand, you won't be focused. But if you sit, you will be. It just helps. Yeah.
I find personally it's quite hard to concentrate on Gayatri, even though it's easier sometimes with the holy name. So you should just practice.
It's just practice, but also just see that the using proper times.
Times and rules will help.
Because his point is when at the sandhya, that's when the meditation is the most, can be most easily affected, but unless you concentrate to do it, then it's the time when the mind will be the most distracted. Suspension of study. Both when one studies the supplementary treatises of the Veda and when one recites the daily portion of the Veda, no regard need be paid to forbidden days. Likewise, when one repeats the sacred text required for a burnt oblation. You have that when you're learning new portions of the Veda, that there are certain omens that if those come up, you just stop the study. Because it means after that point, study won't go properly. But it's only for the Veda itself, because it says supplementary treatises means the Vedangas, the Upangas, and the daily portion means that you're going through, you're reviewing, so then there's nothing because you already know it, right? Or if you're doing a yajna where you're applying those mantras, it doesn't affect either. The supplementary treatises of the Veda are the Vedangas and Upangas. The daily portion of the Veda are those portions already committed to memory that are being revised. And the sacred texts required for burnt oblation are those parts of the Veda that are recited at a yajna. In chapter 4, the following text is found. Let a twice-born man always carefully interrupt the Veda study on two occasions, namely, when the place where he recites is impure and when he himself is unpurified. So that's the basic principle. Is that the place is impure, then that's not a place to study in, or if you're impure, then you won't be doing the study. That means committing to memory new verses of the Veda. There are no forbidden days for the daily recitation, since that is declared to be a Brahma Sutra, an everlasting sacrifice offered to Brahman. At that, the Veda takes the place of the burnt oblations. So just the daily recitations that the brahmacharis do of the verses that they've learned, or if the Brahman is just going through to maintain his understanding and he does so much a day, does a chapter a day, whatever it is he does, then that is like his part of a sadhana. So then it replaces even doing the daily burnt, daily yajna that they might be required. And is meritorious even when natural phenomena requiring a cessation of the Vedic study take place at the exclamation Vaushat. For him who, being pure and controlling his organs, during a year daily recites the Veda according to the rule, that daily recitation will ever cause sweet and sour milk, clarified butter, and honey to flow. Boy, if they'd only known that one. Fighting with the locals, they could have been chanting Vedic mantras. Let an Aryan who's been initiated daily offer fuel into the sacred fire, beg food, sleep on the ground, and do what is beneficial to this teacher until he performs the ceremony of Samvartana on returning home. Sleep on the ground basically means not on a bed like that. Though Prabhupada talks about that previously the brahmacharis, because of the brahma tejas, they could sleep directly on the floor. They didn't require a bed. You know? I mean, they have the diska, and they just sleep on that and just, you know, cover themselves, and they're done. So it doesn't matter how hot or cold it is, it doesn't bother them. Like that. Okay. So... It means you have to see what applies where. So it says here, let an Aryan has been initiated until he performs the ceremony of Samvartana. So then it's talking about a brahmachari. Because between Upanayana and Samvartana, that's brahmacharya. After Samvartana, then it's grihastha. He doesn't perform Samvartana, then he's a Naistika brahmachari, he just remains. So you'll see certain things, like how this Gayatri is chanted, suspension of study, that applies even afterwards. Because before that, you're the brahmachari. I mean, Gayatri is sadhana you'll do your whole life. The suspension of study is before graduation, you're the student. After graduation, you're the teacher. So it'll still apply. Okay. Protection of knowledge. This is all the brahmachari section. According to the sacred law. Oh, so then the breakage of study is not in this section. Oh, they probably give it for the grihastha, for the teacher. Because the brahmachari, it's not his worry that it continues or not. It's the teacher, so it won't be in this section. Okay, protection of knowledge. According to the sacred law, the following 10 persons, namely the teacher's son, one who desires to do service, one who imparts knowledge, one who is intent on fulfilling the law, one who is pure, a person connected by marriage or friendship, one who possesses mental ability, one who makes presents of money, one who is honest, and a relative may be instructed in the Veda. Right? So you have all aspects there. You know, so that means the one here is who has a mental ability, or who is honest, right? Who intent on fulfilling the law, or who is pure. So these can include anybody. So if they have the qualification, then they can be taught. You know? Otherwise, these other aspects are also to be considered. But it's just because he has money doesn't mean that if he doesn't have the qualifications, other qualifications, that he gets there. But it may be he has a qualification, but you don't know him, or he's not a relative, or like that. But, you know. Unless one be asked, one must not explain anything to anybody, nor must one answer a person who asks improperly. Let a wise man, though he knows the answer, behave among men as if he were an idiot. Because if you explain it, they don't care anyway, so they're going to give you trouble. But this also then takes sense control. Like that. So that's the...
Is this similar to not instructing the faithless?
Instructing the faithless, yeah. Because the point is if someone wants to know, then if you tell them, because the Brahmin will speak will be based on Shastra, so if the person rejects that, they're rejecting authority, they're rejecting Shastra. So then knowledge is insulted, because the knowledge is real. It's not just an opinion.
Yeah.
Like that. Of the two persons, him who illegally explains anything and him who illegally asks a question, one or both will die or incur the other's enmity. Right? So it always creates some kind of fight, some kind of bad feeling. So that's why, generally in the Vedic thing, then the Brahmin, he just moves around as if he doesn't know anything. And if somebody recognizes and asks, then he'll do. But otherwise, you see the person who has been self-appointed, general of, instructing everybody in the temple, then it always ends up that there's some disagreement around and things like that. Nobody appreciates, because he's not supposed to do that. Right? It's not authorized. In his own mind, he's authorized himself.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's not supposed to happen. Where merit and wealth are not obtained by teaching, or at least due obedience, in such soil sacred knowledge must not be sown, just as good seed must not be thrown in barren land. Right? You'll get some credit for it, you'll get some benefit from it, or at least someone will be submissive. Right? The person just wants to know, he's submissive, he has that proper attitude, then there's a benefit, because they'll use the knowledge. Or someone's going to give a nice donation means they're not going to give the donation unless they're trying to use the knowledge. Or that some credit, they'll say that, you know, the person respect their knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So in all those cases, then the person who's hearing the knowledge will take it seriously. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they won't. So it's not a matter of just going anywhere and saying anything to anybody.
Does that mean don't share the knowledge?
Well, why use the word share?
Well, maybe that person might value to understand something.
But then there's due obedience, or there's merit. If he would value it, there's merit. Or there would be obedience.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But just to walk up to somebody and inform them of your opinion, that has no value at all.
No, just if they were doing some service, you know, and you felt something, you have to help them.
Yeah, but the point is did they ask?
No.
So then you have to be careful.
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, so that's the point is you know, there's no advantages walking up, because what's your relationship? So that means, according to the sacred law, 10 persons, are they the son? Do they want to do some service to you? Right? Or they themselves are a teacher in the area. You know what I'm saying? Or who is intent on fulfilling the law. So these are the qualifications. Like that. So one has to be careful. In sacred law, if you just want to come up and tell them that, you know, if you do like that, then, you know, they're sawing on the branch on the side next to the tree and they're sitting on the other side. And you can mention that if you do that, then you'll fall off, you know. But even then, they may not take it seriously.
Okay.
What is it Prabhupada says, and then when he falls, you're a great astrologer.
Yeah, because he's... Yeah. How did he know?
Yeah.
He can see the future. Yeah, like that. So that's the time when you wish you hadn't said anything. Even in times of dire distress, the teacher of the Veda would rather die with his knowledge than sow it in barren soil. Because otherwise, the knowledge itself will be insulted. And so that means in the future, you won't have knowledge. Right? So, like that's...
So, right, it seems that when we're distributing books, we're kind of in a...
But you're also dealing with transcendental knowledge. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, the Vedanta is in one sense beyond this, but the culture is still the same. So that's why you're trying to... Means, I don't think anyone's gotten a bad reputation from going up nicely explaining what this is, and then there's an interest, and then selling the book, but going up and presenting it as something else and using various tricks to get money and stuff like that, then they don't appreciate. Mm-hmm. So then, even though they have the book, which on one sense is a benefit there, that they're not interested to read it, or they think badly towards devotees or towards the movement, is not to your credit. You know what I'm saying? So it's a mixed result. Does that make sense? That's the point, is that you're dealing with the transcendental, but you're dealing with the transcendental in a material environment, so you have to consider also the environment you're working within. You know what I'm saying? You're in the kitchen, you are cooking for Krishna, but you still have to consider the elements that you're using. You go into the kitchen, there's nothing else, let's say, except cumin seeds, so therefore I'll make a cumin seed preparation. You know, no, it's spice, it's not a main prep.
Cumin seed sorbet.
That you might be able to get by with, but then you're using it as a spice.
Yeah.
You know, you're not taking a bunch of cumin seeds, you know, like soaking with water and then making a chance with mustard seeds and then throwing them in and then frying them up. And, you know.
I'm definitely not doing
that. You know, and then you cut some more. Oh, actually, you couldn't do because you only have cumin seeds. You make a chance of cumin seeds because that'll have the sharp flavor.
Yeah.
Then the other ones you've soaked, so you put them in. Then you have the other part of that you've taken and made into a paste.
Yeah.
So then you put it in so you make a nice sauce.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
No. Okay. Sacred Learning approached a Brahman and said to him, "I am thy treasure, preserve me. Deliver me not to a scorner. So preserved, I shall become supremely strong. But deliver me as to the keeper of thy treasure, to a Brahman whom thou shalt know to be pure, of subdued senses, chaste and attentive. But he who acquires without permission the Veda, from one who recites it, incurs the guilt of stealing the Veda and shall sink into hell." In other words, you're taking the knowledge without the person knowing. Right? He's sitting there reciting or that or teaching, and you're hiding and you're getting that knowledge or stuff like that. Then that's not going to work. There has to be. You know, if the person's put out a tape, they put it out there so they can't complain. So that's not stealing. That means it's where they're not, and then you're taking it.
Like that. So this is the story of the
Kalavya? Yeah, basically. He's taking that element, but he doesn't have the permission of the teacher. So he's not actually a student. Because student means it's a relationship. So you've surrendered and you've been accepted. Right? But here it's he's not accepted, but he's acting as if he is. So here again, the principle of worship of guru, or worship of a respectful person, always gives benefit. But the point is because it wasn't a proper relationship, it doesn't give a long-term benefit, it only gave temporary. Does that make sense? Because these Vedic rules work. You know, they're like that, we'll complain. Well, what if the guru, he's not, you know, the Uttamadikari, Nitya Siddha, liberated, you know, fixed and divine, you know, like that, all the different definitions that they give, right? Which range everywhere from Nishta on up to Prema, like that. But, you know, the person saying it have no idea that that's what they're saying. So, but they say this, what if he's not qualified, we worship him, this and that. Still the process works. Because you're respecting, you know, the guru. You'll get the benefit of that respect. Right? Then, their qualification, then is another consideration that adds to that. Does that make sense? Like you get... You give donation to a Brahman, you always get benefit. Now, their qualification is greater, you get more benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So even if they're not actually a Brahman, but just dressing as one, posing as one, that you've given them a donation based on their position as a Brahman, you'll get benefit. You know, it'd be double. You get 100%. Which is not bad. 100% profit, most everybody would consider, is good. But we're talking about what you can get, you know, is you know, thousands or tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of percent benefit. So you're not going to get that, but you will get benefit. So there's the activity themselves, and there's the qualification of those involved. Just like the person is doing the worship, but he's not very qualified. He's thinking of this and that. He'll get benefit, but not as much as if he's focused. Does that make sense? So there's no loss. That's the thing. But we're unable to break these things, so we can't see that benefit is there anyway. You know, just like we're saying here is, oh no, but if you know you're distributing your books and you're doing like this and you get no benefit. No, you always get benefit. You're doing transcendental service, but if you have an attitude, then that attitude is going to be giving a problem. So it's mixed.
I heard from devotees, they say, for example, you don't have to give donations to poor people because it's not transcendental, you just help them and who knows what they use it for.
Yeah, but you don't give them much. But the point is yeah, that's that thing. Generally speaking, the ones that the tradition is the ones that don't ask are the ones that are proper to give to. The ones that come and follow you down the street and pulling on your cloth, those ones. Technically, you're not obliged to give them anything because that's improper behavior on their part.
You just feel bad, you know, when you don't do it.
It's part of charity. But you don't get the same benefit as that. That's just the human element. You know, so charitable works are there. I had once, one beggar was following me. This was back when 2 paisa or 5 paisa was a standard donation, you know, like that. And he was following me down the street, you know, dressed as a sadhu, but I was Western, so he just got the Western part. And then I just turned around and says, "Hey, I'm a sadhu, I'm a brahmachari," you know, like that, you know. And he, like that. He opened his money and pulled out 2 paisa. And gave it. You know? So, yeah.
Sorry, have you heard that if you help an old lady over the street, that you will have to beg
mercy
again so she can help you?
You do have that element on the material platform, but if you're just doing it to help, then you know what it's just you move on. You know what I'm saying is that we don't overemphasize. You know what I'm saying?
In mind, you know, on consciousness, because you just do it and go on.
Yeah, that's the point. Is you just do it and go on. Like say that's that story. The 2 sannyasis come down to the river and they're going to cross. You know what I'm saying? So the one picks up the lady, puts her on the other side, and they keep walking, right? So after a few hours, the other one says, "I can't believe that you did that." He says, "I carried her across for like 5 minutes like that. You've been carrying her for a couple of hours. Now, who's carrying the lady now?" You know, so that's the point is that we get into it so much that this can't be devotional service. But at the same time, as on the other side, only this is devotional. You know, like this is that devotional service means you've connected to Krishna. Now, the point is it's Krishna's old lady. You know, so then you know, helping like that. It's just being cultured. It's just being human. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's there. The situation is there. That you don't walk down the street looking for old ladies to take across the street. You know, stuff like that. Okay, so. Okay, topic 4. Oh, 5:10. Okay. A student shall first reverentially salute. This is respectful behavior towards gurus, right? So, respectful superiors. A student shall first reverentially salute that teacher from whom he receives knowledge, referring to worldly affairs, to the Veda or to Brahman. Right, so he receives knowledge. So whether it's a material knowledge, whether it's to do with aparavidya, or whether it's to do with paravidya, anybody he's actually learning from as a teacher, then he shall respect them. Right? A Brahman who completely governs himself, though he knows the savitri only, is better than he who knows the 3 Vedas but does not control himself. Eats all sorts of food and sells all sorts of goods. Right, so now you're defining the qualification of the teacher or of the student. Right, it means in other words, someone who behaves according to the etiquette. Right, he'll even though he doesn't know much is better than someone who knows so much and doesn't behave according to the etiquette. Right? Yes. So that's why etiquette's so important. Right? We'll just take, no, the service is the all-important. Doesn't matter, push all etiquette aside, that just gets in the way. No, etiquette's very important. One must not sit down on a couch or seat which a superior occupies, and he who occupies a couch or seat shall rise to meet a superior and afterwards salute him. Right? So if you're sitting somewhere and the teacher comes, then you stand up, then offer your obeisances. Right, that's the method, right? Or if it's a, he's sitting on, you don't use the same seat. Right? For the vital airs of a young man mount upwards to leave his body. In other words, as soon as the superior comes, his life airs start going up. They just do it on their own. It's not a matter of opinion. It's just, you know, that's just the way it is. When an elder approaches, but by rising to meet him and saluting, he recovers them, right? Mm-hmm. So if he stands up, he catches them. But if he doesn't, they leave the body. Mm-hmm. So that means you weaken yourself like that. He who habitually salutes and constantly pays respect to the aged attains an increase of 4 things, namely, length of life, knowledge, fame, and strength. right? Things that people are all looking for. You just have to be nice to your mother and father, right? Yeah, you know, so they don't catch this. So there's so much problem with life, knowledge, fame, strength these days, because no one's respectful towards elders. And age here means age would be the element of qualification in that field. Mm. Because they may be, as will come up, maybe very young. But if they know the Veda, then they're considered old.
These elements are not sitting on the same level. Srila Prabhupada used to sit...
That'll come up at one point. It'll give exactly where you can sit and where you can't.
Okay.
In other words, if you have another option, then you would sit in a lower place. But if it's just that's the facility, then... You know, like you're in the car, you know, they're sitting on the back seat, and you're sitting on the other side. Not that you sit between the seat and the front seat on the floor. No. So it gives a whole list. Like on a boat, you can't sit somewhere else. A rock, there isn't another place. A mat, there's not, you can't, you know, just under the mat, you know. Then the mat, then the guru on top, that would be perfection, right? You know, no. Does that make sense?
My question was if Prabhupada would do that because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta liked that he said, because of pleasing him to do that, he was asking him to do it.
That's another thing, but generally that's a bench that'll come across. If it's a bench, it means a couch, it can be. But the normal thing is you wouldn't, but you can. You know, but then they're also, you know, approving of that. It's just like, let's say you're in a living room and the person's sitting on the couch, but everybody could sit on the floor. That's arranged. You sit on the floor. You don't just come up and sit on the couch. Well, I can sit on the sand. No. Like that. But if it's just you and him and he advice, please sit here, then that works fine. That would be the thing maybe to mention the reference to that other point. It means where you can sit. It's just in case it comes up. After the word of salutation, a Brahmin who greets an elder must pronounce his name, saying, I am such and such. And he should address in the same manner all women. Okay. A Brahmin who does not know the form of returning a salutation must not be saluted by a learned man. As a Shudra, even so is he. In other words, if you're respected, you have to return. You have to reciprocate. Doesn't mean that you necessarily are off. Reciprocation is the same form, but there has to be a recognition, right? In other words, you know, does that make sense? So that aspect is there. Does that make sense? You notice that there's a big block here dropped out. So therefore we shouldn't be so worried about saying, you know, the Vancha Kalpa Dhrunishara, these different things are so long and lengthy. You know, this other stuff is, you know, you have to, it's actually a whole process.
Mm.
Let him ask a Brahmin on meeting him after his health with the word Kushala, a Kshatriya with the word Anamaya, a Vaishya with the word Kshema, and a Shudra with the word Anarogya. Riti, the word Kushala means welfare. Anamaya means freedom from distress or sinful reactions. Kshema means gain and safety. And Anarogya indicates freedom from disease. Because right? These are what's dear to each of these groups. Yeah. He who has been initiated to perform a Shrauta sacrifice must not be addressed by his name, even though he be a younger man. Because Shrauta means you have the Upanayana, which then you're Vedic Brahman, but then there's initiation into these big sacrifices. So someone who knows how to do the Ashrameda Yagyas and all these different Yagyas like that, the things that are beyond the daily performance that every Brahman does, right? These big sacrifices, then they're in a more respectful position. Because as far as those who know ritual, they're the topmost. Right? He who knows the sacred law must use in speaking to such a man the particle bo and the pronunciation bhavat, your worship. In other words, you speak respectfully, right? So in English that becomes hard, but in most languages of the world they do have endings that mean respectful, like that. I think English is one of the few that doesn't, you know, like that. So it just means. be respectful, even if he's younger, because when you get into these Vedic elements, is that as you know knowledge or know ritual, then it puts you in another category. Right? So sacrifice and knowledge are two items of respect. That will also come up later. Yeah, Sanskrit word bo means sir.
Like that. Like the Australian English word mate.
Mate. Yeah. G'day, mate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and a good whack on the back. How's it going, mate? Yeah, would there be a difference? Is there a difference? Like one is higher than the g'day, mate, and how's it going, mate? Is one considered more respectful than the other? Or are they both? You know, you'd have to figure out.
Potential
PhD in that. Yeah, yes. Could be, you know. Yes, we're out here in the outback here, and then, you know, Crocodile Dundee used it in this way. But down near Sydney, then they used it like this, but in Tasmania, then. But to a female who is the wife of another man and not a blood relation, he must say lady, bhavati. Right? In other words, one must be respectful to the wife of another man who's not a relation. Right? Means if you are also, you know, someone who performs Shrauta sacrifices, and therefore you're a friend of this person, then you might be using the name. But it will say later that the difference is 3 years, depending on what it is. Like common man, it's 10 years difference, and you call him senior. Mm-hmm. Right? And it comes down, so someone amongst those of Shrauta, we know the Shrauta is 3 years only. To his maternal and paternal uncles, right? Means if the lady is a blood relation, then there might be some other term that's used, something more close and all that. But if they're not, then one is respectful. To his maternal and paternal uncles, fathers-in-law, officiating priests and other venerable persons, he must say, I am, and rise to meet them, even though they may be younger than himself. Right? So, you know, you have that. You don't see it often, but I've seen it where the uncle is younger than the nephew. Right? Just because somehow or another one of the elder brother, his children were later than his younger brother, right? You know, so then, yeah, you know, much older uncle and a much younger, excuse me, much older nephew and much younger uncle. So I've seen that. But. So still, it must be, unless by friendship and that's adjusted. But the point is in the formal situations, then these are there. So you have to say your name, right? Because that's always the thing, you go up and you try to find out their name. No, you have to say your name first. If they're a senior, like that. A maternal respect towards senior female relatives. A maternal aunt, the wife of a maternal uncle, a mother-in-law, and a paternal aunt must be honored like the wife of one's teacher. They are equal to the wife of one's teacher. The feet of the wife of one's brother, if she be of the same caste, varna, must be respectfully touched every day. But the feet of wives of other paternal and maternal relatives only on return from a journey. But yeah, wife of one's brother, meaning the elder brother.
Martin Pittsfield, does that mean the eldest brother?
Yeah, or I mean, who's elder than you? Just like Arjuna means if they had different wives. You know, I mean, some of them do, but it's like Arjuna would also touch the feet of Bhima's, or, you know, I say Yudhishthira's wife, like that. But Nakul and Sahadevi wouldn't. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Right, so this is that, the maternal aunt, the wife of the maternal uncle, mother-in-law and the paternal aunt. These ones directly. So there's going to be others on that level. So these ones then, because they're close, So every day they would be respected. But if they're not in this group, they would only respect. You've come back from a journey, then you'd be respected. Or you're about to leave, then you would do. But in between, it's not a day. It's not necessary. It's daily. Towards a sister of one's father and of one's mother, and towards one's own elder sister, one must behave as towards one's mother. But the mother is more venerable than they. Right? So the principle is this: there, when we say equal to, it means that same kind of respect, but she's still more superior. You know, just like the wife of the teacher amongst these others still is more superior.
Than the mother? The wife of the teacher is more respected than the mother?
Depends on what kind of teacher. That we'll get into. Because we had three kinds: material, the Vedic, and spiritual, like that. So it depends.
Maharaj?
Yes.
In Eastern, generally, you use the term Prabhu and Mataji for.
Yes, so that works. Yeah. That covers all. You don't have to worry about figuring out who they are. You just use those and you're done.
There has been a trend recently that some Matsudis, they will not accept being referred to as Matsudi.
So that's covered here by Manu. A Brahmin who does not know the form of returning a salutation must not be saluted by a learned man. As a Shudra, even so is he. So therefore those ladies just ignore. And if they expect you to, why? And if they say, because you have to respect women, it says, no, but you want to be respected as a man. So therefore, you know, like I remember one lady talking about, you know, women can do all the things that men do, is that blah, blah, blah. And then in the next sentence, she's complaining how she was riding on a bus and the men nowadays don't get up to give her a seat like they used to. It's like, you know, take your pick. You know, you can't have it all. You know, that's the thing. That's why I say it's cheating. It's they want the respect of being a woman and that of being a man. Because they're not about to give up the respect of being a woman. You know, like that. Because if a man just comes in and says, please, you know, okay, come, really, I really, really want this. It's kind of like, well, what is your qualification? If the woman comes in and says, please, this, that, you got to consider it. You know what I'm saying? So they want that plus, you know, it's cheating. And Prabhu, it's like, okay, there may have been a couple of letters where Prabhu said Prabhu, but most of the time it was all Mataji. When I came and said it was all Mataji, I had never heard the term Prabhu until, you know, it came up as an issue, I think, in the 90s or something. I never heard about it. So it's like that. And anywhere I went in America, any lady I bumped into, it was all Mataji. You know what I'm saying?
Maharaj, if you get called Prabhu, can you say I prefer to be called Mataji?
I would just leave it, because if the guy just off the bat calls you Prabhu, then I would just leave it, because either. Yeah, because, you know, they're dealing with some kind of issue-based thing, you know, that they're being cool or something like that, you know, it's not a. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not an in-between. It's not like Ms. or something. It's just kind of, okay, you don't want to be Mataji, then pick something new, you know. You know, it's like you have Mrs. or Miss when they get Ms. Okay, that's something, okay, but, you know, so then find something like that.
All right. Then there is this Vajkalpa, which many times I'm hearing that early days, every morning, everybody respect. Then we are in the Dham, and kind of.
So it's like there's 5 million people. You'd be doing that all day. Think of all the benefit you'd get. You might not do anything else, but you get a lot of benefit.
Basically, I became sannyasis, definitely.
Just look at it. You wouldn't need to do any separate exercise either. You know, Raghunath Das used to offer a basis to 2,000 Vaishnavas every day. That's like full dandavats. You know, stand up, then off the leg, then. Serious exercise. And that's all on, you know, one leaf cup of buttermilk every other day. That's spiritual potency. Okay, so in other words, it's just, there's a tradition, you follow it. They don't like it, just avoid that place or avoid those people. You know, I would just avoid that section of the world. Like that. It's just, you know, it's like, you know. There's a lot of water around it. It's not, you have to pay an extra, you know, 20,000 rupees to get there. So you might as, you know, save money. Does that make sense? See, just don't worry. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about these things. You bump into it, don't get upset. Just, you know, okay, you know. You know, and they say, no, excuse me. You know, and just walk off. That's it. And then just don't say anything to them. The next time it's, hey, you, or Hari Bol. You know, leave off the, you know what I'm saying? Like
that. Come up, like, lady to lady, and we use the name?
That you can, but it's always, there's the consideration of, it means it'll come up. If someone's senior, then you wouldn't use the name. Like that. Respectful social dealings. Okay, so okay. Here's the place. Fellow citizens are called friends and equals, though one be 10 years older than the other. Men practicing the same fine art, though one be 5 years older than the other. Right? Kshatriyas, learned men, though 3 years intervene between their ages, but blood relations only if the difference of age be very small. Like that. So then these are the considerations. Mm-hmm. Know that a Brahmin of 10 years and a Kshatriya of 100 years stand to each other in the relation of father and son, but between those two, the Brahmin is the father. Yeah, there's just no comparison. So that's the whole point, is we put so much emphasis on administration as the top. No, Brahmin's the top.
It's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, you think, yeah, it's father and son. Yeah, obviously. Wait a minute, right?
That's so well presented.
Yeah. I think there's a story that'll come up about this also. Wealth, kindred, age, the due performance of rites, and fifthly, sacred learning are titles to respect, but each latter named cause is more weighty than the preceding one. So wealth is the lowest, then relationships, more, age is greater than that, then performance of sacrifice, and then fifthly, sacred learning. So the one who has more knowledge of the sacred, and as I mentioned before, has character, that's the most to respect, right? Then the due performance of rites means who's actually done that devotional activity or that sacrifice. Let's say someone like how much, you know, book distribution they've done or something like that. So somebody's done 30 years of book distribution, that's right up there, you know, stuff like that. Age, then actually anybody who's older than, as we saw before, by that thing, that's considered. Kindred, then relationship. So even though the ages are this, you go by the position of the relationship. And wealth, someone with more wealth is respected. So the big guy comes to the temple, he's very wealthy, he is to be respected. Right? Like that. So in this, yeah, okay. And whatever man of the three highest castes possesses more of those five, both in number and degree, that man is worthy of honor amongst them. And so is also a Shudra who has entered the 10th decade of his life. 10th decade at age of 90. So Shudra, that's 90 and above, everybody should respect. Right? So he's also respected very well. It doesn't matter what this social standing is. Like, it means in some kind, like I think America, I'm not sure if they do else in England, when you hit 100, the president will send you a letter congratulating you. You know, like that. I don't think they have to send many letters, but you know, it's done.
So that in England,
letter from the Queen. Yeah, they expect that you'd get. So, in other words, then the combination of those. So, whoever has the more of those categories, and to more degree, then that's how you tell who's more to be respected or not. Right?
That was your point on the dealings of that Brahman to Indra when he was trying to rob
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Indra means, the point is that in the Vedic thing, it's not that this one has more, so the other one doesn't deserve any respect. You respect the person for what they have. So let's say one has more sacred learning, but one has more wealth. So the one with sacred learning respects the other one for his wealth, and the one with wealth respects the Brahmin for his knowledge. But of the two, the Brahmin is superior. Right? Or let's say even you have a Brahmin who's more wealthy, and then another one who is, let's say he's performed so many sacrifices, so he's respected for that, and from that he has great wealth. Right? So now there's two aspects. Now the point is the other one has more knowledge. So if it's only a little more knowledge, then it would become basically equal, because the other one's done a lot of sacrifice and has wealth, which is two aspects. But if he has a lot more knowledge, then it's still, you know, in other words, each of those has more weight, but it's also how much of them and what to what depth. So, you know, yes.
It's interesting that the knowledge is not something that obvious. I mean, people can perceive it as such.
Yeah, but the symptom of knowledge is humility. So someone who has a lot of knowledge but is proud isn't actually that knowledgeable. They have a lot of facts. So in other words, amongst those who have knowledge and are proud, who has the most knowledge, he's to be respected, not the one who's the most proud. But amongst those who have lots of knowledge and are proud, and someone who has knowledge and is not proud, is humble, then that person's more, because he's gotten realization from it. Yeah, he's actually gotten the fruit of knowledge, which is humility. Like that. You know, and then of knowledge, then there's transcendental knowledge. So if we're talking about Western knowledge, greater than that will be Vedic, and then Vedic, then what is transcendental? So that would also be. So if you had someone who was, let's say, a Sanskrit grammarian, you know, and a top level of that, and you had a Western PhD, the Sanskrit grammarian is higher, because the quality of his knowledge is greater. You know, unless he only has a little bit of it and the other one's had very great in that. You know, he's the world exponent in that field and this one's just a good scholar. But if he's the top, you know, Sanskrit scholar in India, and this is that he's the top PhD in his field in the world, the Sanskrit scholar is greater. You know, but then someone who has transcendental knowledge is greater than both of those.
Knowledge of the Vedic Samhita is higher than knowledge of the Vedangas? Or are they considered?
You would probably take it like that, because it's there. But still, it's amongst the Aparavidya, your Veda would be your highest. But Paravidya is still higher. You know, but the person with transcendental knowledge will be respecting the person with the knowledge of the Veda. From that, but the point is he should be respecting the other one for his knowledge in the transcendental. Does that make sense? So the point is, in the Vedic is if someone has a quality to respect, it's respected, even if you are more respectable. You still respect that quality, because the quality is Krishna's. Because it's not that, yes, I am knowledge. No, Krishna's knowledge. I am wealth. No, Krishna's wealth. He is power. He is influence. Pandaji. So he has knowledge. Okay. Way must be made. Here's another interesting thing. Way must be made for a man in a carriage, for one who is above 90 years old, for one diseased, for the carrier of a burden, for a woman, for a snataka, for the king, and for a bridegroom. Right. So that basically, as we went here, then we also started going by either need or ego. You know, so the king has ego, but he's always king. But the bridegroom, he's king for the day, so that he takes precedent over the king. You know, so let's say the king is going, but a bridegroom's coming with his party. The king will move, even though he's the king. But it's his day. You know, let him have his day. You know, tomorrow he's your citizen. You know, but today he's, you know, king of the world, right? Yeah, like that.
What's snataka?
Snataka is a Brahmin typically it would be a Brahmin who's graduated from the Gurukul, right? So a graduated Brahmin, then he would be there, like that. Though you may have a Kshatriya or a Vaishya who have graduated but aren't married yet but are still following the vow of a Snatak. Mm-hmm. Right? It means a Brahmin will always be a Snataka. Okay. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But a Kshatriya and Vaishya would only be Snataka up to marriage. It means they might still retain the dress and go around the holy places and, you know, for darshan or for gaining further knowledge or things like that. So they could do that. Generally they don't, but they mm-hmm. could. But a Brahmin who is considered a Snataka means he's graduated. Like, because the Brahmacharya would be, you know, considered junior. Because he doesn't really have a social position. Right? Grihasthas have the social position. So, makes sense. Okay, among all those, if they meet at one time, right? Because you have to deal with, you know, what happens if they all come in, right? You know, it's like one of those, like that. A Snataka and the king must be the most honored. And if the king and a Snataka meet, the latter receives respect from the king. So in other words, the Snataka is the most mm-hmm. respectable. You know, so like that one time it was, I don't think it was Astavakra. No, it wasn't Astavakra. Alabandhu.
Yamunacharya.
He's going, and they're just kids. You know, I think they're 8 years old. They're walking down the road, you know? And the king's coming with his whole retinue, you know, the whole army and everything like that. They're going out for...
Astavakra Muni, I think.
He also did that. But this one already did. Yeah, I think Astavakra, he also did the same thing. But both in the same thing, is they're coming along, the king's coming one way and he's coming the other. And then, you know, because they're kids, then someone from the front, you know, a senior personality comes up, and because they're Brahmins, you know, they don't just send over one of the guards. You know, it comes up and says, you know, a king's coming and this and that. And then he said, you know, their reply is, yeah, so then let the king move. It's my road. I'm the Brahmin. It's my road. He's using my road. Like that. So then they know, okay, well, he knows a little Shastra, and he's got a little bit of, you know. Like that. So then they kind of go back and tell the king, you know, like that. So he says, hey, bring him here. Let's see. You know, like that. So then, because they wanted an audience with the king. So you do that, the king will definitely want to know who you are, either to offer respect or to cut your head off. One or the other, but it's definitely going to work. You know, so they both got audience with the king. Okay. Okay, just to we'll go into this on Monday, but just to answer, I'll touch on your question. They call the Brahmin who initiates a pupil and teaches him the Veda together with the Kalpa. Means he's initiated, he's taught him the Veda, he's taught him the ritual and the Rahasyas, which means the hidden portions. Means the metaphysical or the spiritual. They call him the preceptor, the acharya, the latter. So that's the highest of them. Then, but he for a living teaches a portion only of the Veda, or also the angas of the Veda is called the sub-teacher, upadhyaya. Right? So the acharya, he is more respected than the upadhyaya, because he's only teaching a portion or another branch of Vedic knowledge. So then, also then the wife of the teacher would be according to that status of what is the relationship with, you know, the husband. Is that what it is?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaura.